All right, we are back riding the pine another week. Al, we are now 1 weekend closer to the Final Four.
That's right.
Not really a whole lot of upsets out there this year. I think for once, for the last 5 years, I think the committee mostly got the top seeds correct. I think I saw it's the first time the top 10 seeds had all made it to the Sweet 16 or the Yeah, no, it was the top two. All the top eight seeds have made it to Sweet 16 for the first time since 2019. So looks like they actually did a good job this year.
I think this kind of this weekend leading into the Final Four, there's going to be a lot of good basketball played. A lot of interesting matchups, you know. I really
Lot
look.
of interesting matchups, and then there's a juggernaut sitting in Boston right now.
Oh man, they are playing well. I would not want to be San Diego State right now.
No.
I think the winner out of that regional is going to win the national championship. Obviously we think UConn, both of us had UConn winning, but if one of those teams, like an Iowa State or an Illinois, happened to beat UConn, I mean, I think those two, one of those teams, if it were to happen, I'm saying if it were to happen, you'd have to maybe look and say that you know, whoever comes out of that, you know, regional is going to be the favorite to win it all.
Yeah, and we'll delve more into that later on the show. Tonight, I do want to start out with a conversation we had yesterday early, and it kind of got me thinking about we were talking about Andy Enfield, and I guess everybody's probably seen it when this will be published, is going to be taking the SMU job, leaving USC. A lot of people saying that he's going to try to bring Bronny James with him, obviously. LeBron James' son. There's thoughts that LeBron's then going to somehow force a trade to Dallas to reunite with Kyrie. But it kind of got us thinking, Alan, you and I were talking about it yesterday. These kids now that are the one and doners, and what is their success rate in the NBA? And I got interested and looked into it yesterday and a little bit today, looking at the rookie of the year rankings for the last 5 years. So last year, you have Paolo Banchero. Okay, well, he was a one-and-done guy. But who was second? Walker Kessler. He was a three-year player at North Carolina and Auburn. And then Jalen Williams from the Thunder, who's a three-year player at Santa Clara. So then you move to 20 – let me get it up here. Then you move to 2022, and it's Scotty Barnes, who obviously Scotty Barnes, one and done at Florida State. But again, he played for Leonard Hamilton, who was an NBA coach. So a little bit different scenario there. Evan
Leonard
Mobley.
coached, real quick, Leonard coached with, you said, Stan Jones with the Wizards, right?
Yeah, Leonard. Well, Leonard was the head coach
Did he
of.
coach Michael?
No, he
Okay.
Michael. When Michael got in there, he forced Leonard out and brought in Doug Collins.
Okay. I was just trying to remember that.
Yeah, so 2022 was Scotty Barnes, Evan Mobley, Cade Cunningham. They were all one and done guys. That's kind of the outlier year. 2021 was LaMelo Ball, Tyrese Haliburton, and Anthony Edwards. LaMelo Ball plays over in Australia. Tyrese Haliburton's, I think, a 2 or 3 year player at Iowa State. I know he was. I don't think he was a true. Was he a one and doner?
No, he wasn't a one and done.
I didn't think he was. Of course, Anthony Edwards, the top pick, and you look how good he is now. He's one of the best players in basketball, but took him 3 years to get there, 2 years to get there. 2020 was Ja Morant, 2 year guy. 2019 was Luka, who's been playing overseas since he was 14 years old. So,
Trae Young in that one too, right?
but he was second. He didn't win it. I think what you're seeing is that these older guys, not the one and doners, are winning these, or they're coming into the league ready to play. This year it's looking like it's going to be Victor Wembanyama, who's going to be the runaway favorite. Chet Holmgren's right there, but again, Chet Holmgren, yay, was one and done, but he sat out a year. His body matured to an NBA body for a year. Third is Brandon Miller, and Brandon Miller's just on a bad team. He's just putting up good stats.
And yeah, I was gonna bring that up. Brandon Miller was, you had two really one and dones from 2023. Brandon Miller, Anthony Black.
And
Jarace Walker.
Yeah, and they're not anywhere near the best, in my opinion, outside of Wembanyama, the best rookie has been Jaquez for the Heat.
Yeah.
And that's a guy he's a four-year guy. But yeah. Here's the thing. You go into a system in Miami, you've got to know how to play smart basketball, every possession. If you can get on the court and on the floor for extended minutes with them, you're a good player.
Don't forget about G.G. Jackson.
Well, G.G. Jackson was a one-and-done guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's kind of putting up numbers for a bad team. That's being forced into action.
Yeah.
You almost don't want to count that.
Yeah. Another guy, too, a Tracy Jackson Davis, but he was not a one-and-done, but he's come into the league and played pretty well on that Warriors team.
So, Al, what are kind of your thoughts on what would you say is kind of a cutoff for if you're an NBA GM, are you going to take, what is kind of your cutoff say, I'm going to start looking at a player at this age?
To be honest, probably like 17. I mean, I don't think I want to really be like, if you're watching like a 15 or 16-year-old, like, they have so much more maturing to do. You know what I mean? And obviously a 17-year-old does too. But if you're going to, maybe draft a kid like a – I'm speaking on last year's draft, right? You have Wembanyama, Miller, Henderson, and the Thompson twins, right? And even Anthony Black. All those guys were under age 20, right?
Correct.
So I'm thinking you got to start, looking at maybe some of these kids around, 17 years old to kind of give you a full year of evaluation to try to project what they're going to be.
Well, so are you going to be taking would you be more inclined to take a one and done freshman or a junior?
Well, here's one thing I'm going to say before I answer that question. Someone like Victor, who's playing for the Spurs, and a Luka, those guys were playing grown man basketball when they were 14, 15, and 16. You got to remember that Luka was 17 years old when he played in his first NBA game with Real Madrid.
Well, I'm taking the international players completely off the table. I don't think you can count them. I'm talking strictly college players. If you're looking at this year, am I going to take a – I'm trying to think of a, obviously I think the guys from Kentucky, Dillingham, Shepherd, and Reeves, I think they're way above most people. But if you're just taking a, let's say you're picking 16.
Yeah.
And your choices are a one and done freshman who's come out, let's say he averaged 13 points a game, or a third year player at, or I'll give you Dalton Connect at Tennessee.
Yeah.
Are you going to take a Dalton Connect at Tennessee, or would you go take a Reed Shepherd, who a lot of people think Reed Shepherd is going to be a good player?
That's a tough compare. That like if I have Reed Shepherd and Dalton Connect, I love those two those prospects a lot. But to be honest, I think I got to take the older player. And here's my arguments. A college basketball season goes from November to, if you're lucky, the end of March, and or obviously the beginning of April, but we'll say you're a full month of March. So November, December, January, February, March. That's 5 months at the max. How long is an NBA season? November, December, January, February, March, April. 7 months.
At the minimum.
So what I'm trying to say is, if you're a young prospect, I think just the value of having more time to get in the gym and work and train, I think those are some that's some valuable time that you need to really develop. Because when you get to a pro environment, they're expecting you to play a lot more than you practice, right? So the a pro athlete, you know, if you think about percentage wise, you're playing 70% of the time and you're practicing and training 30% of the time. And that's the maximum, I feel like. So I feel like you expect a lot of these players to develop when they get to the NBA and get to these professional levels. But to be honest, it's a lot more just playing games. You know what I mean? I feel like you need that extra. I think that's where college can be important, to where you can have more time to really develop and come into the league and be a lot more, you know, physically ready for that style of basketball.
Well, and you take a guy like Connect. I mean, Connect's at Northern Colorado for 3 years, and he comes into the SEC and he's lighting it up. He's probably going to be the National Player of the Year. I think a guy like that is going to be more ready to come into an NBA situation and be able to, you know, go off the bat. I mean, you look at Damian Lillard. When Damian Lillard came into the league, he was ready to go from the jump because he's a four-year player. I think nowadays we are seeing more college players that are the one and done. I think we see more of them struggling now because of, you know, you see injuries start to pile up because they haven't played this many games.
Right.
You see, you know, just the struggles on defense. I mean, go look at any NBA playoff series the last 5 or 6 years. You just see teams hunting rookies. I mean, they are. That's who they're looking for every possession down the floor.
Yeah.
So I think if – and granted, look, they're going to hunt a Dalton Connect or a Reed Shepherd. It doesn't matter who it is. They're going to hunt the rookie. But if you've played enough basketball, at least if I'm 23, I at least know, hey, I've been in a college weight program for 4 years over being in one for 8 months.
Exactly. And I think that's one thing, you know, you brought up Dalton Connect. He talks about his transition from Northern Colorado to Tennessee. He talks about how much more explosive and how much more strength he put on in just that extra year. I think that's huge. I think that's so valuable. And I think if you look at the, besides like a LeBron James, he was a one and or a right out of high school player before one and done came around. You have Carmelo Anthony. He was probably the first one and done player, wasn't he? Was Carmelo one of the first one and dones?
I was trying to think
where he had to go to college instead of coming out.
No, because him and LeBron were in the same draft class.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
I think the first one and done class, we'll see. Howard was the top pick in 05, and he may have been the last year that they, because I think it was like 06 or 07, they started making kids go to college. Well, I know they had to go in 07 because Derrick Rose was at Memphis.
Yeah, and OJ Mayo. Those were the guys, you remember? But when you go ahead, Rob.
And then, I mean, I think you look at a guy like Rose. Rose could have gone from Simeon to the NBA.
Oh, you look
at a guy like John Wall. John Wall probably could have gone from Christ the King to the NBA. Word of God, my bad. Kevin Durant could have gone straight from Montrose to the NBA.
But think about like a guy we saw. Think about I saw Jahlil Okafor in high school. We both saw Jabari Parker. Think about how good they were. Obviously, Jabari has the injury, but I'm just saying, think about how good they were, and their games never really panned out in the NBA. You know, so you know, it's you're betting a lot on an 18-year-old to change your franchise. And if you look at a guy like Steph Curry, who we would arguably say he's probably the best player in the NBA right now, he had 3 years of college. You know what I mean? So I think he would also say that those 3 years at Davidson and playing for a great coach to really develop him and make him better and really work on his basketball IQ and kind of use those off seasons to really improve. Those are that's some valuable time that I feel like he would say was important to his success in the NBA.
when even Steph had to come into the league and learn, because I mean, go look at what he looked like from a body standpoint coming out of Davidson. I mean, he yeah. was maybe 160 pounds soaking wet. I mean, he was not a very built guy. And he could not stand up in the NBA. And so I think you look at these college guys, and I mean, these freshmen, I mean, I'm not seeing if I'm an NBA GM, unless I see a can't miss prospect, I'm going to either take the international guy or I'm going to take the multi-year college guy.
I agree. And I agree. I actually have, so it's funny when we were talking about Steph Curry, I actually took a picture of this. I used it a lot just to really to inspire some young kids, but with their basketball dreams. But right here, I have weaknesses. This is from an NBA scout on Steph Curry, his weaknesses: not a true point guard, out of control at times, shot selection, stuck between a one and two, ability to defend positions at next level, lateral quickness, limited upside, backup fringe starter, college system makes him difficult to evaluate. And then average athleticism, average size, average wingspan, frail frame. And then this is the kicker: relies too heavily on outside shots.
Well, but at the time when Steph Curry's coming to the league, you look at it, I mean, the three-point ball, go look at the points per possession from 2008 to now. I mean, for example, go back to the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies used to win games because they only averaged like 96 points, but they allowed 91. There's not anybody in the NBA now that allows under like 104.
Yeah, if you're not scoring one, if you're not scoring, 120 a game, you're struggling.
Yeah,
it's just funny, but no, that's a good point. But I'm just saying, you're right. I think, I will say Steph obviously did a lot when he got into the league, but I think just having those extra years in college, don't jump the gun early. Really value your development. And I think I know these kids want it so bad to just go pro and make their money. But I think sometimes they rush it too soon. They're rushing almost to the end of their career. You know what I mean?
Well, and now with NIL, I don't see the need to rush if you're that good at this point. I mean, I get you want to go make the money, but I mean, really, do you want to go play for Detroit or, the Wizards? I don't.
And if you're not playing and you're just sitting the bench, you're not developing when you could be in college playing and developing.
Or if you're just on a bad team, like Cade Cunningham's on a bad team. I mean, I think he would have been very, very, it would have helped him to stay at Oklahoma. It would have benefited him to stay at Oklahoma State as much as it would have benefited Oklahoma State for him to stay. I don't see the point in him going to Detroit, and now Detroit.
Think about like an Anthony Bennett back in the day, Rob. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he was bad.
Like, do you think you're one and done? Think about a Shabazz Muhammad. Like those types of players you never heard of again. They were like, the best player in high school. We're definitely going to
They weren't good because they weren't good in college.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But they're just it's funny. Those high school rankings matter so much. I don't think people realize, like, if you're a top 10 recruit in high school, you can kind of go have a lousy college freshman year and still rely on your high school ranking and your high school hype to be a lottery pick.
I'll give you an example today. I was looking at the Bleacher Report NBA draft, mock draft. Reed Sheffield, they have being the fifth pick. They have his NBA comp is Kirk Heinrich. There is no way in hell you're going to pick Kirk Heinrich with the fifth pick.
Yeah.
Or they have Rob Dillingham going three, and his NBA comp is Darius Garland.
Yeah.
Rob, I have watched enough Kentucky basketball. Rob Dillingham isn't a third of Darius Garland on his best day.
Yeah.
I
This,
mean,
I will say, this draft class, I feel like, is not the best. You know what I mean? And I don't think there's not really a guy that I see that's going to, you know, really change your franchise for the next 15 years. You know what I mean? Unless the kid from France is going to be that good, which I need to maybe look up some footage on him and kind of evaluate where he is and see kind of where his upside is.
Well, which one? There's two.
Is it Czar?
They're the Risacher, Zachary Risacher, or Risacher, and then there's Alexander Czar.
Alexander Czar, that's the one I was referring to.
But, I mean, you look at a guy like, for example, they have Stephon Castle from UConn as the sixth pick. He's not the best player on his own team. He's not the second best player on his own team. And I'd make an argument he's not the third best player. But you're going to draft him sixth?
And the kid from Baylor that missed the – I mean, I'm not saying two free throws are going to cost you an NBA draft, but what's the kid from Baylor's name that missed the free throws against Clemson?
I know the one you're talking about, but I can't think of his name right now. I know the one you're talking about, though.
Let me look it up real quick. But they had him projected as a lottery, I'm pretty sure.
I didn't see him in – Jacoby Walter.
Jacoby Walters, yeah.
I saw him like 19 today. But, I mean, for example, they have Terrence Shannon Jr. at the 12th pick.
I would take him over all them.
If it wasn't for the off-the-court stuff with him, I'm taking him, like, in the top three. I'm taking in the top. You're telling me there's an NBA team who doesn't want a 6'7 guy who's accurate from 25 feet and in? Like, that's the guy I want to go get.
What about Donovan Clingan? Do you think he'll be a good NBA player?
I do. I think Clingan could be a good player. Now, Clingan's problem is he needs to add some – I think he needs to add a little bit of weight. I mean, he's 280 now. He doesn't look 280. But, you know, I've seen, for example, and we've gone way off, but we'll just continue on this one. You know, Clingan, because I've seen him pick to the Grizzlies, and I've seen Grizzlies fans just up in arms about it. I'm like, Steven Adams was 7'1", like 290. This guy's 7'2", 280. Like, I mean, that's what you need. But, again, Clingan, he's played for who I think is one of the best coaches in America for 2 years. I mean, that guy's going to be ready to play at the NBA level.
Yeah. I like him. To be honest, I know people would, you know, I know what people say about him. I think they're crazy, but I think a Zach Edey in the NBA is an interesting player, but also Kalkbrenner from Creighton. I'm just saying, I think those are three bigs to really evaluate and kind of watch their progress. I'm not saying he's going to be a all-star his first year, but I think, you know, people really kind of dog his game. I think there's a lot more skill and athletic ability there than people really, really see. You know what I mean?
I'm not sold on Edey. I told you that the other day, though. I mean, if you give me a start bench cut between Edey, Kalkbrenner, and Clingan, I'm starting Clingan, benching Kalkbrenner, and cutting Edey. I don't know what he can do. I mean, you look at the NCAA tournament or look at the Big Ten. I mean, Edey gets away with assault in the lane. So,
I guess
he's not mobile. Now, if he can be the next Yao Ming, like some people are saying he could be, then, I think Yao is one of the most underappreciated players of the last generation.
I think that shows how good Yao was. I think it's crazy, though. There's a difference, even though it's just 2 inches, there's a big difference between 7'6 and 7'4. You know what I mean? But I think Yao maybe had probably more skill, a higher skill set than probably Edey.
Yao had a very high skill set.
Yeah.
Yao had a very high skill set that he really didn't get to show.
Yeah. But I was just bringing up Edie because that's just an interesting prospect that who knows what he'll end up being, you know? So I just was thinking about that. But it's going to be interesting just to see down the stretch just how these players develop and the type of decisions that these high school and college prospects make regarding their professional career, you know?
Yeah. So, Al, we'll move on now to our second topic of the evening, kind of talking about coaching searches a little bit. So, obviously, the big news, I think it was Sunday night maybe, Dusty May is going to take the Michigan job. Honestly, a little bit of a shocker. I thought he was going to take the Louisville job, but I think he's going to do a great job at Michigan. I think Michigan needed somebody to really – steady the ship again, and I think he's going to be able to do it. What are kind of your thoughts on Dusty May?
I like Dusty May a lot. I think if I see someone that has been at a program and built a program up, you know what I mean? Like really, really resurrected a program that had not had a lot of winning success and a lot of basketball history. And I look at what he did at FAU. I mean, he literally turned like an old room into like a practice gym for his players. So I'm just saying, I think it takes a lot of vision to, you know, take a program like FAU and take them, you know, I mean, taking a team like FAU to the Final Four. If you can take FAU to the Final Four, I know a lot of things kind of had to go their way, as does, you know, any Final Four run. But I would, if I was Dusty May in his shoes and I knew that I took FAU to a Final Four, I would feel very confident walking into a situation at Michigan and feeling pretty comfortable that I can rebuild this program and bring the players in that are going to, you know, bring us a Big Ten championship.
Well, we have breaking news here. Florida Atlantic has hired John Jacques to be their new head coach on the Baylor staff. Now he was actually on staff with Mark Few at Gonzaga before that. So looks like Florida Atlantic going to take the Kansas State route and go hire another Scott Drew assistant.
Yep.
Obviously worked out really well for Kansas State.
Yeah, Drone Tang's had a really good, you know, first 2 years for sure.
But, you know, another coaching news, we've seen a couple. I saw Mark Byington is going to go to Vanderbilt, the James Madison coach. I thought that was an interesting play.
You think maybe they were thinking, you know, I would think JMU is a really good academic school like Vanderbilt. Do you think maybe someone that has kind of built a program like that at a school where you can't get every player you want, maybe that strategy?
I don't know, because Vanderbilt's in a tough spot. They really are, because NIL hurts them, and any player that is good at a high major program that maybe have been lightly recruited, like, you know, you probably were thinking, oh, Byington's going to come in, he's going to develop players. Well, any player that looks good at a Vanderbilt's going to look to transfer. And I don't know what their NIL looks like. My guess is it's not very good. And yeah. So I would have gone for somebody who knows how to operate in the NIL space. You know, you and I talked about the name I would have hired, which would have been Will Wade.
That's crazy that no one wants to touch him right now. You know what I mean?
I think his personality is the reason people, because he has never once apologized or shown any contrition to what he did. And so you have to wonder if that's not part of it as well.
Yeah, I think it's definitely what went down at LSU is definitely affecting his ability to kind of get that next, you know, power, I guess you would say power four job now with no Pac-12. But I think look at a guy like Sean Miller. Sean Miller kind of was able to get himself back, you know, at that level of, but I think it helped that he had been at Xavier before, you know what I mean? So maybe, yeah. I think maybe those paths are a little bit different for the two of them. I will say back to Vanderbilt, they have a really good recruit coming in. I think a low four-star player from Nashville. So I'm just saying, if you can really recruit that Nashville area and try to hold down, you know, that local, the local talent, but it's just hard. It's, you know, the academic requirements. But I think to win what 32 games with James Madison, that's an unbelievable year.
It is. I thought he did a great job with them this year. You know, had an older team, so I think in a place like that, you're going to have to build. Maybe you start young and maybe you just try to hang on to what you can, build from the portal and say, hey, we're probably not going to be very good next year. Let's try to be good the next year. Let's just try to incrementally get better.
Well, it's crazy. Did you see that stat where 10% of college basketball is already in the portal?
Doesn't shock me one bit.
980 players in the portal already.
There's not that many starting roles. I'm just telling you.
Yeah. But then again, that kind of goes back to our first conversation, you know, I guess. But I guess, you know, you only get 4 years of college, you know.
I don't know. How many do they have now with COVID? I lose count. The Mississippi State's got guys. I've just stopped trying to figure out if they're eligible still or not. I just say, oh, well, he's still on our roster. Guess he's still got years left.
Well, I didn't realize that Cormac Ryan for North Carolina is like almost 26.
That's, you know, that's ridiculous.
But did you see Dan Hurley, field of 68? Did you see that? I actually posted it, but he said, I don't think it's healthy for players to change schools like underwear.
Well, you know, and I love Dan Hurley, but that's kind of a hypocritical comment coming from him. Since probably his second or third best player is on his third school in 5 years.
Yeah, is that Newton?
Yeah, so I get what he's trying to do, but, you know, that probably was not the best quote to make with his team, the way they
were. Like, it's kind of like Lane Kiffin in a way saying he hates the portal, but he kind of accepts that it's a part of it. He has to use it. That I was just saying, I remember him talking about how much he thinks the portal is, you know, when it opens and things like that, it's so bad for the game in a way at times. And it takes away coaches focusing on their team and just being a coach. But he also said, you got to kind of play the game. You know what I mean? And that's how I would feel. Like, if I was a college coach right now, I'm not a fan of the portal at all. And I just think there's just no loyalty anymore, which, you know, I guess it is what it is. But you also got to play I would have to play the game.
You know? Yeah, I agree. I just.
Zero sugar hydration.
Our advertisements are coming in a little too early, Rob.
Yeah.
What do you think about, I guess the other big hire was, I'm trying to think, we have Andy Enfield to SMU.
We've got that one. We've got Pat Kelsey apparently to Louisville, although nothing's been announced. We have obviously May to Michigan. There was one more that's been announced.
Colin Calipari staying at Kentucky.
That was
big news for people.
I saw Gary Parrish saying that Kentucky was just scared to fire Calipari. I was like, no, they fired Tubby Smith for the exact same thing. They ended up with Billy Gillespie.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking, like, Memphis radio probably needs to sit this one out. They got enough problems with the Memphis basketball program. Maybe let's don't worry about other people's basketball programs right now.
It's the wild, wild west out there, Rob, these days. Everybody has an opinion about everything, but I think we already kind of clarified how we feel about Coach Cal and just, you know, it is what it is. I get they lost to Oakland, but, I mean, look at the talent he brings in. If he went and took the Rhode Island job tomorrow, he'd pull talent at Rhode Island.
Yeah, because he's John Calipari. Talent, you know, doesn't, you know, talent follows him. It doesn't come to the school because of the school.
Right, for sure. Are there any other coaching changes you want to talk about? Or we have DeVries to what, West Virginia?
Yeah, Darian DeVries goes to West Virginia, so he'll take his son with him there.
I saw his son was already.
That'll be interesting there. I think that could be a very interesting pairing. I don't know how that's going to work out. I'll tell you the one I was actually most interested by was Kyle Smith from Washington State going to Stanford. That's an interesting fit.
But you know why? You know why?
Well, the obvious is that Washington State doesn't have a conference next year.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the first thing. When I saw that, that's the big first thing that came to my mind was, I mean, Washington State's going to be playing in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
I don't think they're not going to be an official member, but taking on kind of an honorary membership in a way to being allowed to play kind of in that conference until they find their next home, right?
Are they going to do like Notre Dame used to do, or I guess still does, being independent and everything, but they're going to play in a conference for basketball and all the other sports?
And I think even for football, I think Oregon State and Washington State will play in the Mountain West this year. I'm pretty sure. I would think the Big 12, I'm surprised they haven't come in and just scooped them up. You know what I mean?
So here it is. Both schools will compete in the West Coast Conference in men's basketball.
Okay, West Coast. Wow.
Whoa, West Coast is about to get good.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Gonzaga, Santa Clara, St. Mary's. Now you'll add Oregon State, who they've been good before, and Washington State, because I don't know who Washington State's going to get.
Oregon State went on that run 2021, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, and I think they've made some kind of scheduling agreement in football with the Mountain West. I think you're
okay,
right.
Okay, so that's where I was thinking. You know, I was thinking I'd heard the football commitment then to the Mountain West. But it'll be interesting to see. You know, if there's any more jobs that open up and just kind of the coaching carousel for college basketball over the next.
The USC jobs now open.
Yeah, so, that's a good point. That's a great point.
Who takes that one? I don't – that look, that's an enticing job.
Yeah. I mean, anything in Los Angeles is an enticing job, just – and all the talent in California. But then again, you have a guy like Mick Cronin. You know, I know the UCLA job's a different animal, but think about as good of a coach as he is. He took some heat this year and took a little bit of a step back.
Well, and he even said, you know, a lot of his was NIL. He couldn't get people involved. And, you know, a lot of people said that's why Chip Kelly left UCLA.
That's just crazy for me to think about that they don't have in Los Angeles, that they wouldn't have the NIL capabilities.
Well, you know, they're kind of the other school out there. You know, you got all the NIL money that flows to USC, at least for football. I don't know about basketball, but
And maybe at the end of the day, you know, cities like Los Angeles, cities like New York, cities like Miami, kind of the big Showtime cities that we have in our country, like maybe I would say New York cares more about their college sports than like Los Angeles. Los Angeles doesn't care about USC.
No, they don't. I mean, USC has not been, you know, relevant in basketball in a long time. I'll tell you though, I actually see some candidates listed for that job, the USC job, and one name that's coming to mind, and it is, I don't know if his agent's throwing it out there, but I mean, another name that continues to be thrown out there is Eric Musselman. Would Eric Musselman go take the USC job?
He's really good at Nevada, just out west.
I'll throw a name out there. Penny Hardaway.
To USC?
I mean,
that'd be crazy.
Does he kind of feel the heat in Memphis and say, I can go out to USC. I'm in a better conference. I don't think he does. No, but if he's USC, I at least make that call.
Yeah, I think he and then again, I mean, I guess that would maybe be a good thing for to keep LeBron's kid at USC, you know, having an NBA, kind of that NBA pipeline, you know what I mean? But I think Coach Hardaway stays here. I just think he has too much Memphis loyalty but that's actually an interest that having a former pro basketball player who's, look, say what you want about Memphis basketball. I know a lot of people in the city, a lot of people are giving him heat. He's won 130 games in his 6 years at Memphis. I know this year didn't finish the way people wanted, but I'm just saying he's had some success. But just to have something interesting to talk about, I mean, him at USC, that'd be an interesting job.
I know who's going to get the USC job right now. Juwan Howard.
You think so?
Who is best friends with LeBron? Juwan Howard.
They played together.
Played together, and he was on that staff in Miami.
Yeah.
If you want an odd zone favorite, yeah, in my
there
mind,
you go, right there.
Get that job, it's Juwan Howard. I think they're going to go get an ex-NBA guy. I don't think they're going to go the coach route again. I think it's going to be an ex-NBA guy.
Yeah. What about the Mobley twin or the Mobley brothers? His dad was on staff. Do you think he would get promoted?
I don't. I think they're going to go big fish hunting because I think they know they have to go get a big coach because they know who they have to kind of keep.
Yeah.
You know, whether it – and I don't know what their recruiting class look like. But I would just think you have to go get a top-of-the-line coach.
I agree.
I'm not sitting here telling you that Juwan Howard's a top-of-the-line coach, but I think you brought up something interesting when you mentioned LeBron James. I think LeBron James is going to – if Bronny is going to stay at USC, I think LeBron James is going to run this coaching search.
He's going to have a lot of pull, I'll tell you that. He's going to –
yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I don't know how much pull he's going to have. How much pull would the Lakers have to step in and try to go hire someone? I mean, is this a situation where Rob Pelinka, Michigan guy, played with Juwan Howard, makes a call, says, hey, let's go get Juwan Howard. It'll keep LeBron in L.A. It'll keep Bronny at USC.
That's actually a really good point. I would think Pelinka would hopefully have more interest in his old alma mater. But right now, his job relies on LeBron staying in Los Angeles. So that would keep LeBron there by keeping his son there.
I just think all the stars aligning and are kind of pointing to Juwan Howard will be the next head coach at USC.
I think that's actually a really good just kind of process of thinking for you to really think about kind of how all those people are connected to each other. And I think Juwan Howard, you know, will have to land somewhere, and it makes sense. No, it really does make sense for him to take a job like the USC job.
So, Al, we'll move on now to some transfer portal news. You said it earlier, 980 kids in the portal.
Or I think 800, like 600.
Okay, and we're
890 or so. It's 860, something like that, between those numbers.
9 days in? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Real quick, I was really shocked by this transfer. The big from Colorado. Trying to think of his name. I just thought of it.
Did he enter today?
The Enter Today. Enter Today.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking
Lampkin?
About.
Lampkin. Lampkin Jr.
Yeah.
Is it Eddie Lampkin?
Let me see. I saw it earlier today, and
He had been at TCU and was not playing as much, but had an unbelievable NCAA tournament.
Yeah, Eddie Lampkin.
Eddie Lampkin Jr., he's transferring. Right now, the number one player in the transfer portal is a 7-1 center from Stanford, Maxime Reynald.
Yeah, he's the kid from France that a lot of people thought would go pro after this year. Obviously not going to happen. The one that really shocked me going in was Michi Johnson at South Carolina.
I saw that today. I did not understand that.
My guess is it's NIL related. I mean, here's the thing with that kid. Where's he going to go? I mean, that offense basically runs through him at South Carolina. No other team's going to kowtow to you to be able to run your offense through them. I didn't agree with that. And that's just me. I think he probably needs to stay there. And I think he'll end up staying there. I think another interesting one, Clifford Omorui out of Rutgers gets in the portal, 6'11" center. I think he's been contacted by just about everybody, but that's a big loss for and he's a grad. He has another year of eligibility. That's a big loss for Steve Feichel, who was as we talked about earlier, earlier in the week, or I guess last Saturday, bringing in a top five recruiting class there to Rutgers.
Yeah. Did you see where the two Pepperdine? I'm looking at these Pepperdine players, and I'm thinking, how are y'all not better? They have two players right now in the top 21. They have player Houston Mallette, 6'5".
He's going to Bama.
He's going to Alabama. And then they have Michael Ajayi going to Gonzaga.
Well, and
then
you know
they have another kid, Javon Porter.
Yeah, you know who that is, don't you?
Is that Michael Porter's brother?
That's the youngest Porter.
So do you think he'll go to Mizzou?
I don't know, but if I'm Dennis Gates, I sure as hell am on the phone with him.
Yeah, and I'm bringing him in with my number five recruiting class.
I know it's high, and we know he can run the portal. But, I mean, you look at a guy like that, I mean, does he maybe look to follow Ajayi or Mallette? Do they try to get him to follow them?
Yeah. It's going to be – you know what name, though, really, really is interesting for me as a – if I was a coach?
I already know where you're going. It's Andrej Stojakovic, kid from Stanford whose dad was a sharpshooter.
I mean, if I'm Memphis and I have not had a knockdown shooter – ever, I'm picking up the phone and I'm calling that guy and I'm bringing Peja in to be my shooting coach.
So I'll give you a name out. This guy is not in the portal yet. I do think he's going to be in, though. Chaz Lanier from North Florida.
Okay.
He is 51% from the field, 44% from three, 88% from the free throw line. So he's almost a 50-40-90 guy. I mean, that's the type of guy you need. That's a program changer.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's funny. This kind of, it's, you know, it's funny. You talked about a player like that at a North Florida. I'm looking at all these players and just where they played last year. It's just funny to see there's not a lot of big schools in the portal. Obviously, we have some USC, we have some Stanford. But, you're looking at a lot of these schools like Belmont. I'm looking at Cal Poly, LaSalle, here we go. Here's a Northern Colorado, UT Martin, Penn, Drake, Florida Gulf Coast, and then all these schools I'm saying, Kent State, all these schools I'm saying are top 50 portal players right now. So it's just, you know, it's amazing how these smaller schools are going to have to recruit the freshmen and develop them. And then the bigger schools can kind of continue to evaluate these kids and pull them in the portal from these smaller schools and take them to the big school.
Well, and the other thing is, I think you see all these smaller schools in the portal, these kids in the portal. They all think they're the next Dalton Connect, and all these programs are looking for the next Dalton Connect. So I think you're gonna see teams take risks on these guys. I mean, you look at a guy, for example, just taking a name here that I'll find, trying to find a guard or something from one of these smaller schools. Let's see here. I'll go back up a little higher. Yeah, here we go. Jalen Leach, 6'4" guard from Fairfield, or Frankie Fiddler, 6'7" forward from Omaha. I mean, that Fiddler kid, he's a 45-36-85 splits. That's really good. But I think this is where it's going to get dangerous. Dalton Connects don't grow on trees. You can't just go find the next one. I think he was an anomaly.
Yeah. And to be honest, you're not really getting these kids out of the portal. But it's not like the portal kids all go to a summer camp and you can evaluate them.
No, you're evaluating them against the Chicago States or the, you know, the Hofstras or the, you know, whoever's of the world. You're not evaluating them against your players. You're not evaluating them against an Armando Bacot or evaluating them against an Alex Caravan. You're evaluating them against guys of that level.
And you're not getting to see them in person. You know what I mean? You're watching them on a computer screen. And there's something to be said about going and actually watching them live and seeing them with your own eyes. You know, I heard Fran Fraschilla last year at the NABC conference talking about, you know, when you're a coach and you're a scout or you're recruiting kids, you got to go see them in person. You got to really trust what your eyes are telling you. Don't get caught up in the stars. Don't get caught up in what you see on film. You got to go see these kids in person. And, you know, in a way, that's kind of the risk you take in the portal. You're not really getting to watch a lot of these kids in person. But it's interesting. I see Michi Johnson. He's not even listed as a top 70. He's not even a top 50 player. They have him listed at 59.
But look at his stats. They're okay. He was 44-32-78. I mean, that's okay. But why would I take him when I can go get a guy like a, you know, name whoever it is, a guy like a Millett or somewhere like that? You know, I mean, I think you have to take a shot on those guys because they're going to be more willing to come in, accept their role. Whereas a guy like Amici Johnson is going to come in, he's going to want the ball in his hands.
Yeah. And obviously me and you are both high on Lamont Paris, but just thought maybe it was a little too early to really be putting this South Carolina team from this past season kind of on that high pedestal at the moment. As good as they were as a team in the regular season, maybe they weren't ready to kind of take on what March has, you know, for you, you know, when it comes to, you know, playing the best teams when they're playing at their best.
Well, and we talked about it on Saturday. They just didn't schedule. I mean, you know, they didn't. The SEC was overrated. We're obviously seeing that now. But, SEC was overrated, and they didn't play a tough schedule outside of the SEC, so they got exposed.
And all these teams that are in the Sweet 16 played a tough schedule.
Every last one of them.
Yep.
Including the two SEC teams.
Yep.
But Al, we'll move on now to the last part of the show. It's going to be our Sweet 16 picks and Elite Eight picks. But we will, I want to go over a little bit of just the second round, just for a few minutes with you. Just to kind of get your thoughts on a couple of things, I guess, kind of a wrap up, if you will. Who was your most impressive team out of the round of 32?
You know what I'm going to have to do? Sorry, I was just looking at these teams. You know the team I'm going to have to pick? And I'm going to sound a little bit like a homer because I just speak so highly of them. I'm going to go with the Houston Cougars. I got to go with the Houston Cougars. And I loved what Coach Sampson said. A lot of teams play together, but not a lot of teams don't play for each other. And I think just, which I've heard, you know, being in Memphis, I've heard that a lot on Memphis Talk Radio because Houston used to be our bitter rival in the AAC. But I think to lose four starters before overtime to foul trouble, have a walk-on come in and hit a huge free throw and just get the stops you needed down the stretch against a really, really, really talented A&M team that was playing better basketball than a lot of teams in the country. To really gut that win out was, I think, the most impressive win of the weekend.
So I will actually go with Gonzaga, the Bulldogs.
I like that one.
What they did to Kansas. I mean, this is a Gonzaga team that a lot of people slept on throughout the year. And I was one of them. I told you, I picked them to lose in the first round. What they did to Kansas, I mean, they tore Kansas apart. They end up shooting 60% for the game from the field, 53% from three. I don't even want to know what their second half shooting percentage was. It's probably in the 70% because I don't think they missed a shot for about a 6-minute stretch.
They're a hot team, and I would not want to play them. And they, Rob, have been to 9 straight Sweet 16s.
That's absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous. The just to be able to do that and that regularity for Mark Few, I just think people really sleep on him as one of the best coaches in the game because they play out west, because they play in the West Coast Conference. And, I mean, he gets his team in the tournament. He peaks them at the right time. And they're ready to go when that bracket is released each and every year.
Yeah. And like you said, too, no one thought they were going to be good enough to make the NCAA tournament. And I think we mentioned this last week, that Kentucky win in February changed their season.
Oh, it put them in my opinion, it put them in the tournament.
Going to Rupp Arena and getting that win was so important. And I'm looking at them against Purdue. I know Purdue is a lot better. You know, obviously you're going to be hopefully a better team in March than you were in November. But, you know, Gonzaga only lost to them by 10 points in Maui. So it's going to be very interesting. That game, I think it's going to be very interesting this weekend to see what Gonzaga does against Purdue. Because I think when – I know Utah State ended up getting, you know, getting beat pretty good in that game. But when they were winning, they were making a lot of threes. You got to make threes against Purdue. If you can make a couple threes against Purdue, you're going to be in that game. And we know from what Gonzaga's shown us that they can do that.
I agree. So now, Al, we'll go into the bracket. First game out of the East region tomorrow night in Boston. The defending national champions in a national championship rematch against San Diego State.
Unreal.
You know, I really believe Brian Dutcher likes where his team is at. I think they are ready for this challenge. They played this team last year. They know what this team's going to throw at them. And yet none of that matters because UConn is just cracking people right now. I mean, they are on Dan Hurley is on a personal screw you tour to the NCAA right now. And It's you and I have talked about it now for a week and a half. UConn's the best team in this tournament, and I don't know that it's particularly close. I think I've made the comment they're going to have to beat themselves for them to not be in Phoenix. I got UConn.
I got UConn too. I will say though, seeing a Brian Dutcher interview, he looked like he had some like really quiet confidence. I think that game is going to be a lot closer than people think it's going to be.
I do too. And you know, here's the thing: you and I were there. San Diego State made a run in that national championship game.
Yeah,
I think they cut it to 4-6.
Yeah, they just didn't make the
6 minutes to go.
They didn't make enough 3-pointers. I mean, really, you know, UConn had more outside shooting. And that was the difference. That was the difference in that game. You know what I mean? Just because they were so packed in on Sanogo and UConn didn't make a lot of shots early, but in that second half, they got hot and they got going.
They did. And then they had, you know, whether it was Newton or Calcaterra or Caravan or what was the kid? Well,
remember last year? Calcaterra was kind of their guy in that championship game. He hit, I think, two big threes.
Yeah, I just think UConn's just got too much. I think they have too much firepower right now. I think they may have more firepower now than they did last year, and that should scare a lot of teams.
Yeah,
I got UConn,
and they have the experience. They've been there, done that. You know.
So you're agreeing we're going UConn there?
Definitely going UConn.
All right, Illinois, Iowa State. I think this could be one of the games of the weekend. I told you on Saturday, I thought Illinois was one of the more impressive teams. They even looked more impressive against in their second round game against Duquesne. Obviously, not the level of competition they're used to playing, but I mean, you get 30 from Terrence Shannon. You get 22 from Domusk. If they get that, they're going to be a hard team to beat.
Yeah.
And I like Iowa State a lot. I've told you, I love what T.J. Otzenberger has done there. I think they're going to attempt to take away Terrence Shannon.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're going to be able to do it. I have the upset. I got Illinois.
You got Illinois?
I got Illinois.
See, this is what I'm torn between. Do I pick the better player or do I pick the better team? Like, do I pick the hot player or do I pick maybe the better team?
So my thought process in that was, you know, if it was just Terrence Shannon doing it for Illinois, I would pick the other team. I would pick Iowa State in the situation. But, you know, whether it be a Danger in the first round, a Domusk in the second round, they're getting another guy to go for, you know, the high teens to the 20s in points, and it's somebody different stepping up every time. And they're still getting that production from everybody else. That's why I think it's Illinois. Now, if Otzenberger goes and he shuts down Terrence Shannon, I don't think he can completely shut him down. But, you know, if he can keep him 10, 15 points, then, yeah, I would say it's going to win. But yeah. I got Illinois until I'm proven different. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to have to go just based on their track record, and I've seen more of them. I'm actually going to go Iowa State.
Okay. All right. So you've got Iowa State, UConn in the Elite Eight. I've got UConn, Illinois.
Yep.
As we move on now, we'll go ahead and pick that one out for the Final Four. Al, who do you have there in that game, in your Elite Eight?
I got to go UConn over Iowa State just solely on their experience and just the fact that they have Klingon. I think Klingon's the best big in the country.
I agree. Even over Edie, I think Klingon is the more complete big. So we'll go UConn to Phoenix.
Yep.
Now we move to the West, North Carolina, Alabama. I think this is another great matchup. There's a lot of different ways you can go here. If Alabama controls the tempo, they're going to win the ball. I think North Carolina has been here, though. They've been in this position. They were here in this position 2 years ago. That's why I got North Carolina in this one. Yeah, I think Baycott is going to cause Alabama a lot of problems inside. That's why I got them. And I think R.J. Davis can contain Mark Sears enough to win that game.
Yeah, I'm going North Carolina, too. I've actually got Arizona in my bracket in the Final Four. But the more I think about it, I think North Carolina is the favorite in the West.
I still lean Arizona. I've told you now, and I just keep harping on it. Arizona reminds me of last year's UConn.
Yeah, I love Arizona. I really do. And Caleb Love's hot. I just think
Caleb Love against his former team. I mean, I assume you're going Arizona over Clemson in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. I'm going Arizona. I think Clemson's run ends. Are they play tomorrow?
I think they're Friday, Sunday.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me see. North Carolina. Nope, they're tomorrow. So North Carolina starts at 8:39 Central Time tomorrow night. And then that means Clemson, Arizona is going to start. Okay, so Clemson, Arizona is the early game. So they're the 6:09 game tomorrow, along with, I think, UConn, San Diego State's the 6:39 game. So a 4 p.m. tip-off in L.A. for Clemson, Arizona. I'll ask you this. Do you think the NCAA had any clue what they were doing with the timing of these regionals? Because it doesn't seem like they did. They're starting the games at 4 and 6 in Los Angeles, and they're going to start it at 7 and 9:30 in Boston. Wouldn't it have made sense to switch those times? Go 5 and 7 in Boston, and then you go.
Are the times on ESPN, are they all – what are they central?
Well, so I've got it on March Madness. I'm on NCAA.com. And so I've got UConn and San Diego State at 6:39 central. That's a 7:30 tip in Boston. So
which game is that? UConn.
That's San Diego State, UConn. And then Illinois – so that means Illinois-Iowa State is scheduled. That's scheduled, by the way, to start – at 10:09 Eastern Standard Time in Boston. They're not going to be done till after 1 a.m. on the East Coast. They probably won't be done till after midnight in the Central Time Zone, because you know that game's not going to start at 9:09 or 10:09 Eastern Time.
No. That's crazy the more I think about it, because you're right. That Clemson-Arizona game is going to be, if it's 6:09 Central.
That's a 4 o'clock tip in L.A. How much sense does that make?
Rob, I think they butchered that, don't you?
I do, too. I don't understand that at all. I had somebody mention that to me today. I was blown away by that.
What they should do is just start these two games. They should just have two games at the same time and just kind of you go back and forth. I mean,
I don't know. I don't agree with that. But regardless of that, Al, so now we got North Carolina, Arizona in the Elite Eight.
I'm going to keep my pick. I know I said North Carolina may be the team to look out for, but on my bracket, I have Arizona beating North Carolina. I'm just going to stick to my guns and go with Arizona.
I agree 100%. I have Arizona as well. Getting to Phoenix, we get UConn, Arizona in Glendale on Saturday night of the Final Four. You're talking a heavyweight showdown. That would be one.
Man.
So now, Al, we'll move over to the south side of the bracket. Actually, games right here in Dallas. Houston and Duke, which this is going to be a good game Friday. I don't know which way to go on this one. Duke is playing very well right now. But Houston just seems to be on a mission to get to the Final Four. They know what they had last year. They took everything Texas A&M could possibly throw at them and still won. That's why I've got Houston.
I think Duke is going to be surprised when they get on the floor of the team like Houston, of just how much just that extra kind of burst that Houston has. I don't think Duke is going to be able to play with that. I really don't.
I think Duke's size could give Houston some problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think Javier Francis versus Filipkowski is a really interesting matchup.
I'm interested to see McCain versus Shedd.
Yeah, I think Shedd's
going to eat him up.
I think Shedd, just having 5 years under his belt and just his toughness, that's going to be – I got to go with Shedd over McCain.
So now we'll move on. NC State Marquette, the last Cinderella. I
want to pick NC State, but
I do too.
Kolick and Payne, or Cam Jones, and shot coach Smart's been there. I got to go Marquette over NC State.
I hate it because it would be, almost poetic that the last time NC State was in the Final Four, it was out west. They're trying to get back out west. I don't see it, though. I got Marquette and Shaka Smart. Yeah. So now we get 1-2 out of the South, and I got Houston.
I got Houston, too.
I just think they're too good.
I think Houston is going – I think – a lot of people are saying, oh, they're too worn out. Oh, they, don't have the depth. I think they kind of proved that they do have the depth. I mean, Villanova won national championships with, playing seven guys. And Houston's kind of in that same boat where they have seven or eight guys that they rely on. I think Houston has more toughness than anybody in the country, and that's what's going to propel them to Phoenix next weekend.
So now we move to the last of the Midwest. Al, we got Gonzaga and Purdue game one. Who you got?
I got to go Purdue. I think Purdue is playing really good basketball, and I think he's a load inside to stop. Definitely at his size, and definitely when, the game is more physical, kind of, if the game is physically, if the referees allow the game to be a physical game, Purdue is definitely the favorite. And I think based on kind of how they've been calling the games, they've kind of been letting them play. Besides that Houston A&M game, they called about every foul they could. But I think Purdue is on a mission too, kind of like Houston. And I think Purdue gets the job done.
I want to pick Gonzaga. I do. I think if they shot the ball, if they shoot the ball like they did against Kansas, they'll win. I just don't know if EK and Watson can handle eating inside along with Greg. I don't see it. For that reason, I got Purdue.
Yeah.
And then the last game, I think this is going to be the game of the Sweet 16. It's Creighton, Tennessee. And you talk a game, you look at the matchups here. Does Tennessee have anyone that can guard Kaltbrenner? No.
I don't think so.
On the other hand, Does Creighton have anyone that can guard Dalton Connect? I don't think so. Alexander will be the one who tries, or Shireman. I mean, he'll roast Shireman. So I think it's got to be Alexander. Every other matchup, they're equal. But those two are going to be the matchups. And I'm going to be honest with you. Dalton Connect right now has just not shown up for Tennessee. I mean, he had an okay game one against St. Peter's, but he had an awful game two against Texas. I've actually never seen a team shoot 3 of 25 from 3 and win, but Al, who do you have?
I'm going to go Creighton. And I'm going to go Creighton because I think Creighton is going to make more threes than Tennessee, and that's going to be the difference. I think Creighton – here's what I think, Rob. I think Creighton's going to hit 13 to 15 threes and win the game.
I mean, Creighton – here's my thing. Creighton only hit 15 in double overtime against Oregon. You know, and they only hit – against Akron, they only hit 10. So, I mean –
But how many did Tennessee hit against Texas?
Well, they hit 3 and 1.
But
can
I'm just
they saying. Drag it into that type of game? I for some reason, I don't know why, I'm picking Tennessee in this one. I keep waiting for Santiago Vescovi to show up. So he's got to show up eventually. They're going to lose. So I'm just going to say he's going to show up this game. I think they win. And then, so for you, it's Creighton and Purdue. Who do you have in that situation?
I'm going the Boilermakers to the
final. So you're going Purdue. If in mine, it's Purdue-Tennessee.
I'm going all one seeds and a two in the final four, Rob.
Well, I go Tennessee. I think the final four for me is UConn, Arizona, Houston, Tennessee. I think even if you have Purdue, Houston, I don't think there's a way at this point you can go wrong with who's going to be in the final four. From a national, just casual fan perspective, a lot more compelling of a final four than we had last year. Although I think last year was a great final four.
I think all these teams are exciting. Like, if any one of them makes the final four, I'm going to be eager to watch them. Obviously, me and you are kind of biased. We're huge basketball fans. But I think if you had a final four of Illinois, Alabama, Marquette, Creighton, I think that'd be a fun final four. Or throw Gonzaga in there. I think that'd be a fun final four.
I agree. I don't think there's a way you can go wrong at this point with the final four. But so for you, you got UConn, Arizona, Houston, Purdue. For me, I've got UConn, Arizona, Houston, Tennessee. Al, we'll see how that turns out.
And I still got the UConn Huskies. I still got the UConn Huskies.
Still got UConn. Or still got UConn cutting the Nets down. I do as well. Well, Al, we will talk Monday on this. It has been fun once again.
Hope everybody has a happy Easter.
Absolutely.
And a happy March Madness.